Connecting the Dots with Dr. Wilmer Leon, where the analysis of politics, culture, and history converge.
Welcome to the Connecting the Dots podcast with Dr. Wilmer Leon. I'm Wilmer Leon. So here's the point. We have a tendency to view current events as though they occur in a vacuum, failing to understand the much broader historical context in which they occur. During each episode, my guests and I have probing, provocative, and in-depth discussions that connect the dots between the current events and their broader historic context. This enables you to better understand and analyze the events that impact the global village in which we live. On today's episode, there are a few events that have occurred and transpired recently that I want to get into. First, the United States has vetoed a UN Security Council resolution granting Palestine full membership in the United Nations. It's important to remember that Palestinian statehood was recognized by the UN General Assembly in November of 2012 when it was given non-member observer status. The U.S. has agreed to withdraw troops from a key drone base in Niger. The United States recently agreed to withdraw more than 1,000 troops from Niger, which will have a dramatic impact on the United States' posture in West Africa. U.S. lawmakers have passed a draft resolution containing some $95 billion in military aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, also approving a bill that will allow Washington to hand Kiev assets that have been seized from Russia and pave the way for a ban on TikTok. So with all of these things that are going on, oh, and by the way, more than 40 Palestinian protesters were arrested this week at Yale University. The school said that 47 students protesting peacefully, the school's investments in military weapons manufacturers were arrested and will be referred for disciplinary action, potentially including suspension. And we know that a similar action has been taken at Columbia. So again, speaking as an African-American, looking at our current circumstances as a community and in the much broader American imperialist context, I decided to call my guest and I asked him, what's on your mind right now? He directed me to a speech by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. entitled Honoring Dr. Du Bois. The speech was given at Carnegie Hall in New York on February 23rd, 1968, in commemoration and celebrating the 100th birthday of Dr. Du Bois. In this speech, Dr. King said that Dr. Du Bois recognized that the keystone in the arc of oppression was the myth of inferiority, and he dedicated his brilliant talents to demolish it. And as Dr. Du Bois was creating the NAACP, Dr. King said, quote, at the same time he became aware that the expansion of imperialism was a threat to the emergence of Africa, he recognized the importance of bonds between American Negroes and the land of their ancestors, and he extended his activities to African affairs. After World War I, he called Pan-African Congresses in 1919, 1921, and 1923, alarming imperialists in all countries and disconcerting Negro moderates in America who were afraid of this relentless, militant Black genius, end quote. That was Dr. King. So this is going to be the basis of our conversation for this segment of Connecting the Dots. Let me introduce my guest. He's a lifelong activist and scholar, former dean of the African American Studies Department at Ohio University, former director of the King Center in Atlanta, and former host of Morning Conversations with Tom Porter. He is Brother Tom Porter. And as always, man, welcome back to the Connecting the Dots podcast.
Good evening.
So with that long introduction, Tom, what's on your mind, man? What do we need to be paying attention to?
Well, you know, it's interesting how you started off. And I would paraphrase what you said was what so many people are guilty of, that is an analysis of the results, not an analysis of how the results were obtained.
Mm-hmm.
Since we actually are told by the Israeli government and our government and the Western governments that October 7, 2023 started the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a real stretch and say, we compare the events of October 7th to the Holocaust. Now that's a stretch. You know, one incident involved a couple of thousand people. The other one involved the assassination murder of millions of people. But they would have you to believe that they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is so important today. If we go back to the speech by Dr. King, among other things, he said, while honoring Du Bois, that Black America will never be free until a long night of imperialism is lifted from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And he also said, in honoring Dr. Du Bois, who was an admitted and avowed and proud communist, Dr. King, in speaking of communism, said that our blind anti-communism, read Vietnam, read Korea, read Afghanistan, that our blind anti-communism has led us into one quagmire after another.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's on my mind is that we're in a quagmire. Where does the African-American community go from here? If we look at the African-American community, it's leaderless. There are individual pockets of people and groups that are challenging the system. But if you look at the Black Caucus, the Black elected officials, the Black actors, the Black musicians, there's no real leadership. We forget that the movement in the 60s was a movement of African people. It was a movement of Black people in this country, but it was a movement. There was a Black Panther Party in Britain, Black Panther Party in the Virgin Islands, in Puerto Rico. So it was a movement of African people against imperialism, against colonialism and neocolonialism. Now the leadership seems to be embracing that. Very few of our leaders have called for a ceasefire, for instance, in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Very few of our leaders speak forcibly about the environment or about police brutality or about the medical conditions of Black people. And that extends to the leaders in Africa, where you have thousands of people risking drowning in the Mediterranean, whether to stay in their home country. And then you complain about the Chinese building roads and infrastructure, and complain that they're trying to take over. So that's what's on my mind.
Well, you know, it's very telling that you talk about leadership, because when I think about leadership, I think about Dr. Du Bois, I think about Dr. King, I think about activists like Dorie Ladner, I think about Mrs. Hamer and Paul Robeson, you know, I think about the Tom Porters of the world. Now we're looking at athletes and musicians. The discussion is LeBron James better than Michael Jordan? You ask that question, oh man, you can be in a bar and wind up with damn near a fight on your hands, that people are so personally invested in that conversation. But ask them about Palestine, ask them about Niger, ask them about Haiti, and you'll get glazed looks, glossed looks, or you'll get talking points from CNN and MSN. Ask somebody about Ukraine, and the first thing you're going to get is, well, Vladimir Putin is an authoritarian and a dictator. Or ask them about Taiwan and China, and you know, they'll, all they want to talk about is a spy balloon. And then, you know, you mentioned some of the individuals in the Black Caucus. Right now, the United States is looking to work with Canada and looking to work with France to reinvade for the, what is it, the third time in 30 years, reinvade Haiti. Hakeem Jeffries, an African-American member of Congress, is leading that charge. In my open, I talked about the UN and vetoing the initiative to take Palestine out of observer status and make it a full-fledged member of the UN. Linda Thomas-Greenfield, an African-American woman, raises her hand as the representative of the United States in the UN against people of color. You've got General Lang. I just talked about what happened and transpired in Niger. A Black general, the head of AFRICOM, General Langley, a Black man, is, you know, trying to find a way to undermine the new government in Niger and keep those U.S. troops there. Those are just a few examples of what we're missing. And Tom, we don't even miss it.
You know, you're so right, but the fundamental question for me, as a Black man, as an African man, I mean, at my age, you know, 84, I'm okay, but when I think about the future of my kids and my grandkids, mm-hmm. what about their future? Mm-hmm. And it raises the fundamental question, can African Americans obtain freedom, justice, and equality in a society that's imperialist, capitalist, and politically, economically, culturally, and socially, for all intents and purposes, it's a nation of white supremacists from mm-hmm. the top to the bottom. And so the question is, do we stay here? One of the mistakes that I think that we've made, that our politics and our politics has been to challenge the society to let us in on it, mm-hmm. to give us an Academy Award and, you know, whatever. And we have to ask ourselves, as James Baldwin raised, who wants to integrate into a burning house? Mm-hmm. And so that thing's on the table as we see America in decline in many significant ways, including its allies in Western Europe. At the same time, that who realizes more when you're in decline than the people who are in decline? And so it looks as if, and the situation in the Middle East is part of that, that the West, the United States, feels that Africa has insignificant leaders and the people are not united. And that is true for African people in the United States, till they're going back in for another helping. You know, they're going back in for another helping. And they sense that Black leadership is weak. Black leadership are going to do what they've been told every 4 years and vote for the Democrats. And if I say don't vote for the Democrats, I'm not saying vote for the Republicans. I'm saying vote your interests.
Talk about that binary thinking, because I wrote a piece a while back, The Dangers of Binary Thinking for the African-American Community. And what prompted me to write that was listening to these discussions about, well, if you criticize Biden, then you are either obviously or by default, you are championing Trump. And no, both of them are not above beyond reproach. Both of them, in fact, in many instances, they're engaged in some of the same activities, because we tend to get caught up in the politics of personality and we lose sight of the politics of policy, not really understanding that, you know, Julian Assange, Donald Trump started that process. Joe Biden followed up on it. That's just one example. So this danger of binary thinking, for us, it's got to be Biden or Trump. We can't see beyond the two options that we've been provided.
Well, that has to do with the philosophical underpinnings of what makes a society go. You know, in America, there's a rare university that offers political economy. They offer economics and political science. At the same time, it's a rare school that offers a course in dialectical logic. Symbolic logic is basically the structure of arguments. That's mm-hmm. what you're going to see in New York in the trial, is that who can argue correctly, not who's correct, but who can argue, who can structure the argument that makes a better case than the other one. It has mm-hmm. absolutely nothing to do whether there's a crook and a bomb that's on trial that shouldn't even have gotten this far. And so I took, fortunately, I took philosophy, symbolic logic from a person who was a scientific thinker. And so he taught it in a dialectical way, which means that your thinking should be rooted in the interconnected of things, the relationship between things, not this or that, black or white. It, you know, either or, it can be both and.
Well, hence this program, Connecting the Dots, always trying to find context and provide the interrelatedness between events so that you're much better able to engage in better analysis, because the factors that you bring in, you bring more factors into your equation.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. But that is the thinking. If you don't vote for Biden, it's a vote for Trump. And if you don't vote for Trump, then it's a vote for Biden. That, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all. But people say those are the choices that we have. No, we have another choice. We forget that we made the most progress when we didn't have a black caucus, when we didn't have many black judges, when we had maybe one judge on the Supreme Court, very few black mayors, because we struggled. We fought. We banged on the door and pushed the door in. And that's not happening. Mm-hmm. That's not happening anymore. So you talk to people and it's that binary thinking, but is that in everything? It's that, you know, it's that kind of thinking. And that's one of the real problems that you have in the educational system here, why America's is lagging far behind in certain critical bodies of knowledge, because I soon realized when I was in undergraduate school that many of my professors conceal more than they reveal.
They concealed more than they revealed.
And they revealed, you know, and you, I remember when I started teaching at Antioch, one of the books I used in the child development course was Thought and Language by Vygotsky. And another faculty member said that that was too difficult for graduate students. How can a book be too difficult for graduate students? But he, the book by Vygotsky, which is Thought and Language, is all a rave now, in educational psychology and psychology circles. But then, because he was a Russian and therefore assumed to be a communist, even though he was born, if I'm not mistaken, before the Russian Revolution. So, but that's where we are. But the point is, my point today is, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Are we going to go down with the ship? Or are we going to get off the ship? But that's the fundamental.
Are we going to take control of the ship?
Right. That's a good thought.
Well, to me, it only seemed like a logical extension of the other two options that you provided. Or at least, since we're using the metaphor of a ship, are you going to create your own lifeboat?
Well, I think it's now time for a serious call, given some of the emerging forces in Africa, in Brazil, and what have you, even in Venezuela, mm-hmm. That it's time for a new Pan-African movement, 21st century style. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really time. And I just talked to somebody who was in Geneva there was a conference, UN conference, on racism and civil rights. I don't have the correct title, mm-hmm. but he's on his way back, and he's said he's going to brief me in person, but he was very optimistic about some of the things that he was seeing, but also obviously concerned. Mm-hmm. So there's movement, and we're in a transitional period on the planet. So there was a unipolar world. It was the United States, and it controlled mostly through NATO and other relationships, the politics of Europe and the United States. But now you have the BRICS. You have a number of, we live in a multipolar world, and it's not just the BRICS with China. There are all kinds of different relationships between countries in Latin America and Central America. And they may not all be trying to get away from capitalism, but they're certainly open to the new changes that are going on in the world in their own interests. Mm-hmm. I mean, people, countries enter in relationships with China, not because they want to become communists, but because they want to get some of what China has to offer. And they realize that they've tried the West. So you have all of these around the world, these various groupings and what have you, and we've got to internationalize our struggle. That's not new with me. It was Malcolm, even Dr. King understood that. Mm-hmm. And some new progressive forces. And I'm encouraged by what I see around what's happening in the Middle East at these young students.
Yes.
on these campuses across the country. And I think that Gaza may be the Achilles tendon of Joe Biden.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. Not only is Gaza the Achilles tendon of Joe Biden, but I also believe that one of the reasons why the Biden administration and so many other forces in the West are so so adamantly behind this settler colonial genocidal project is because I believe they understand, as goes the settler colony of Israel, so goes the rest of colonization, period. And that the end of this is the end of that.
You know, one of these days, somebody's going to really take a real look at the relationship between Israel, not just in this country, but in the rest of the world. And where does its power come from?
Mm-hmm.
And where does its strength come from? Why would Biden put his presidency on the line? But not just his presidency, he actually believes what he's doing is right.
Well, he is on record, and you know, folks can scream anti-Semitism if they want to. He's on record very clearly as saying, "I am a Zionist," which A, proves the point. Not all Zionists are Jewish, and not all Jews are Zionists, because he's Irish Catholic. But he's very clear on I am a Zionist. And contrary to the dominant narrative, Zionism and Judaism are not the same thing. And being anti-Zionist doesn't mean you're anti-Jewish, and being anti-Zionist doesn't even mean you're anti-Israel. It means you're anti-Zionist. But their vested interest in controlling that narrative, which, by the way, they are dramatically losing control of, as evidenced by what we're seeing playing itself out on our college campuses, they've lost control of that narrative, and I don't see how they're ever going to be able to reclaim that narrative.
Well, you know, it's very clear that the forces supporting Palestine is growing, and the questioning, which never happened before, mm-hmm. Israel was never questioned before in a way that it is being question now. But the question is, because, well, you know, let's be clear. You strike up a conversation with the average white person about Jews, and you'll get some anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Hitler was white. He wasn't a Jew. He was white, European. Mussolini was, and the rest of the fascists in Europe were Caucasians. And so what would make this country send them a bunch of weapons in the middle of a situation where the whole world is saying you shouldn't do that?
Well, what did Al Haig say? He said Israel is our unsinkable aircraft carrier in the region. And so they saw in that colony a ideological and military base, bastion, or region that they believed would be their space to project power and to control that space.
I don't have the answer, but it's an interesting question. The reason why I say it's interesting, because the relationship is not making sense now.
Right.
It's not making a sense when you stand alone at the UN you voted against something that the rest of the world was for?
And you're voting, for genocide. You know, it's not as we're not arguing borders. We're not arguing an issue on the maritime navigation of the seas. We're not arguing whether it's 12 miles or 14 miles from your coast to where you get into international waters. We're not arguing access to mineral rights. It's genocide. And it's not even debatable. It's not even debatable, because those such as Netanyahu that are being and Smotrich and Benny Gantz, we have their own language. They have made it very clear in their own statements. In court, you would call that statements against interest. We got to take them for their word, because they're saying things that are really against their interest. So
and doing things that are
and do it exactly.
But you know, still the question comes back: what's on my mind? I care less about the fight between Trump and Biden, and more about what are we going to do. Because we come out losing whoever gets in. And we need to be clear about that. You know, if Biden will do what he's doing in the Middle East, in Haiti, and in Africa, what will he do for us when the vote comes up?
So to that point, Tom, the House has just passed a $92 billion military spending bill, where they're going to send something like $62 billion to Ukraine. They're going to send, I don't know, 20 something to Israel, and of course Taiwan, while people in the United States are having to make decisions between paying rent and buying food, or buying medicine. The homeless rate or the unhoused rate in the United States right now is somewhere around 800,000. And that's just based upon the number of people in shelters. That's not actually dealing in addressing the number of people that are living either under bridges, in tents, living with other family members. The social indices in this country are the rate of suicide is on the rise, particularly among white men. The rate of depression among children is on the rise. And I mean, I can pick a litany of things.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
The misery index, which used to be something that they used to measure the conditions of Black people and other people of color in this country, now it's extended to looking at the misery index among whites. Because when we talk about homeless, and you know, DC is rare where you see a significant number of Black people who are homeless. But you travel throughout the rest of the country in rural Virginia, rural Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Ohio, and what have you, you really see some poverty that you've never seen.
So my question is, $92 billion, and that's just this latest round of funding, and we don't seem to, we're paying for healthcare in Ukraine, we're paying for pensions in Ukraine, when Americans can't get either. And so, but where is the pushback and the outcry from the Congressional Black Caucus, for example?
You know, it really isn't. That's the problem, is the deafening silence come out of Black leadership at all levels. Even here in Washington, I don't think the non-voting delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, has stood up for a ceasefire.
Nope.
I don't think the city council has called for a ceasefire. So where do we fit in all of this? That's the fundamental question for me.
It keeps going back to that.
Right.
The ADL is going to spend, I think the number was $100 million. I think that was the number. On this upcoming election to unseat, if I'm off on that number, folks, I apologize. I was just getting it off the top of my head. I think it's $100 million. To unseat what are considered to be progressive Democrats. Now, in the 2020 election and in the 2016 election, there was all this boo-hoo and crying and concern about Russian interference and Chinese interference and Iranian interference in our elections. Now you've got AIPAC getting ready to, or in the process, or they're in the midst of spending $100 million. And not a peep, not a moan, not a gripe.
Well, and the reason why is the influence. You know, again, you know, people always say the United States is supporting Israel. It's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that in significant ways, Israel and the Israeli diaspora controls significant aspects of American business, cultural, social, and economic life. And that book hasn't been written. Wilmer.
Oh, okay, Tom. Sounds like my next book.
Yeah, that book hasn't been written. And so from that standpoint.
Well, if you can get it written, how are you going to get it published?
It's an interesting question. You know, and so the protection of Israel and its influence in the rest of the world is something that I think gets overlooked because Israel is perceived as a little small country in a sea of Arabs and what have you. But it is more powerful than any African country. It is probably more powerful than most of the countries in Latin and Central America. If you look at its military, its weapons, its technology industry, and what have you. And so it is significant among nations of the world in terms of its influence. And you know, AIPAC is a part of that influence, you know? So that's where my mind is these days. What are we going to do? And then how are we going to get there when we decide what we're going to do? But guess what? We got to do it.
I asked the question about if the book were written, how would it get published? And I was looking at off camera at my bookcase because this book right here, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy by John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt. I remember when this book came out and they damn near ran these boys out of town. I remember it was how long I tried to get an interview with Mearsheimer or Walt, and what those guys were damn near in hiding because the uproar of the publication of the book, The Israel Lobby. Now, it's interesting too, Tom, that you just mentioned how powerful Israel is, but give me that analysis while they can't defeat Hamas. And they can't defeat Hamas. They're getting their hind parts whooped in Gaza. Iran just sent them a real serious message about mess around with us if you want to, and we'll rain missiles down on you for the next 15 years. And Hezbollah has not gotten into the mix. Ansar Allah in Yemen has shut down the maritime traffic in the Red Sea. And before Iran launched their retaliatory strike against Israel, they captured a cargo ship in the Straits of Hormuz to demonstrate to the United States, we will shut down the Straits of Hormuz, we will shut down the Red Sea, and you won't get a drop of oil or nothing out of it. So when you talk about the power of Israel, talk about it in that context or those contexts.
Well, I think the United States and Israel,
is that a good question to ask?
Oh, it's an excellent question because, but what we see in the West Bank and in Gaza is the same thing we saw in Vietnam, mm-hmm. same thing we saw in Korea, same thing we saw in Cuba, same thing we saw in Guinea-Bissau, in Angola, and Mozambique, and South Africa. You know, that is, you could misjudge the sentiment to say that the Palestinians don't support Hamas. Some of that is probably true, but one thing that all Palestinians are clear about,
freedom,
is freedom, justice, and equality. And I think that is a mistake that they've made. And I think that is a mistake that they made in Lebanon. That is, they underestimate. In fact, they have increased the number of young Palestinians and young Arabs throughout the Middle East and their hatred for both Israel and the West. And down the road, Arab leaders are going to have to deal with that. The people
that's a very practical reality, because some people listening to this conversation, when you make that statement, say, "Oh, that's because they're anti-Semitic, and that's because they hate Jews." No, they hate oppression, and they hate oppressors. And no matter what color, stripe, or size they are, I hate the person that has his or her foot on my throat. No matter what size that foot is and no matter what kind of boot they're wearing, that's what I hate.
I think they're making the same miscalculation around these students. I mean, you can lock up 40, you can lock up 50, you can lock up 100 people, but you really can't lock up an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you are willing to make certain changes, the idea is going to grow. I mean, it's small, but it's significant that a group of auto workers, I'm thinking it was in Tennessee.
It was in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Voted to unionize. They thought they had broken the unions.
Mm-hmm.
But the conditions are such,
yep,
among workers, white workers and black workers, that something had to be done, because they're feeling it when they go to the grocery store. I went to Costco to fill up my gas tank the other day, and because I have to use premium in my 1992 Volvo wagon, it cost me almost $60.
I have to put premium in mine. It was $85.
Wow. You know, so everybody's beginning to feel the decline of this economy at the same time that they're saying that the economy is growing. You notice they never use the word development. Again, you know, that's kind of like binary thinking. You know, they never use the word. They always use the word, the economy is growing. That's a quantitative analysis. But a qualitative analysis would be, are you developing as a society? Are your schools turning out educated people? But if you just deal with growth, it's all about numbers.
It's all about numbers, primarily because when they come and tell us that the economy is growing, they're talking about the financialized side of the economy. So if you have a 401k program, then you're happy as a clam, because over the last three or four, maybe five quarters, the financialized side of the economy is running like gangbusters. But we're not manufacturing anything in this country anymore. The manufacturing base in this country is on the decline because we've exported all of those jobs to China and to Vietnam and to India. So the wage, has there been wage growth in this country? No. And to your point about the unions, so Sean Fain comes out, the head of the UAW, he comes out in January saying the UAW endorses Joe Biden. But that same day, he has to give another speech where he comes out and says the rank and file of the UAW does not back Joe Biden because they're more concerned about their paychecks, and many of them are going to support Donald Trump. That's Sean Fain. That's not me. That's the head of the UAW making that statement. And that's what goes to the, as you talked about, the UAW in all places, Chattanooga, Tennessee. And from Chattanooga, they're going to Alabama. Now, that, to a Mercedes plant in Alabama. Now, that's going to be a harder fight because they're going deeper south. But still,
talk. How can you have the largest economy in the world and be a debtor nation?
And debt to your who you consider to be your primary enemy, which is China.
Right. But how can you be, there's some oxymoronic about that.
Right, right.
That you have the largest economy in the world, but yet you're a debtor nation. Debtor nation, and people are seeking different ways of economically engaging with each other other than using the dollar. And yet you know, but everyday people are feeling it. Everyday people are feeling at the pump, at the grocery store,
A pack of chicken wings and a gallon of milk.
The doctor's office. I mean,
if you can get in.
Yep. Yep.
So, Tom, to your point, what are we to do?
Well, we used to have men and women who thought these things. A lot of people are writing books. I'm encouraged about some of the things, but. And there's a lot going on in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there doesn't seem to be a unifying theme. I mean, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott was something that significant numbers of African Americans, Black people, felt in the North and the South, because many of us had a two-state experience, you know, born in the South, grew up in the North. And so on our yearly summer visits back home, we ran into what our brothers and sisters and kin folks were dealing with. And so, and it was a spirit in the community that it was our time to fight back and to be independent and what have you. And that spirit, you can see it bubbling up.
Mm-hmm.
And young people, I'm encouraged by young people, because it's, you really can't lie to them as easy as you can lie to everybody else.
Because they're not watching CNN and MSNBC.
Without a doubt, you know. Without a doubt. So, you know, I'm actually encouraged. On the other hand, I would encourage people to get a passport. You never mm-hmm. know when you're going to need it. I think you ought to look for options, particularly for your grandchildren and what have you. And that's not unusual. people are leaving America, not just black people going back to Africa, but white people going to Europe. Mm-hmm. And some of them are going to places like Puerto Rico.
Right. Central and South America.
Right. And mm-hmm. and say nothing of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people are leaving. And that's one option. That's one option that's, you know, has always been on my mind. And
abandon ship.
No, I'll get on another ship.
Well,
you know, get on another ship, you know, let Biden and Trump and that group fight it out. They seem to be doing a pretty good job of battling each other. But on the serious side, we've got to raise significant questions wherever we can. We got to discuss these things wherever we can. We can't allow this leadership class that we have, and even some of the so-called progressive pundits, we can't simply allow them to get away with what they've been getting away with. And I'm grateful for programs like this and some other programs on a few other stations where people are speaking out and are being heard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And are being heard.
Rich, just really quickly, did you happen to see the fallout from the National Action Network Congress, a convention where folks went in protesting as Hakeem Jeffries was brought in to speak, and folks were protesting Hakeem Jeffries, and Reverend Sharpton called them rent-a-coons, and did you see any of that?
No, but I'm not surprised.
Okay. Then I won't go any further into it.
Well, but you know, you raised an interesting point about the bankruptcy of leadership. You know, they used to refer to Al Sharpton as Jesse on a budget. So, but you know, in this, you know,
let me just quickly make one point, because one of the things that Reverend Sharpton was promoting or displaying, what he was basically saying, look at. So he got Joe Biden to do this little video, and they you know, supporting, you know, thank you, Reverend Al, blah, 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 blah. But so everybody, you know, wow, look, you know, Reverend Al got President Biden to zoom in to the National Action Network convention. But nobody seems to want to talk about that, you know, 10 days after Biden was inaugurated, Biden had to be forced, and I mean kicking and screaming, to have a meeting with Black leadership. And when he got on that call, he disrespected everybody on that call. So but if you didn't see it, you didn't see it. And so, but
you know, it the role of, again, it just points out the bankruptcy of certain African leaders. I mean, you know, here you have a two-way race between Democrats and Republicans. Two Democrats are running in the primary to become Democratic senators. One's a Black woman and one's a white man. Without discussing the merits of either one of them, why would Hakeem Jeffries, Anthony Brown, and Jonathan Jackson endorse the white candidate? I mean, why would you do that? I mean, Jonathan Jackson is from Illinois. I understand that connection mm-hmm. between he and David Trone. Is it Trone?
Trone. David Trone in Maryland. Yeah.
He owns Total Wine and Liquors.
Right.
And Jonathan Jackson is in the liquor business. He's a big distributor in the Chicago area. I don't get Hakeem Jeffries, who's in New York. The point of it is, where's the integrity? Where's the integrity? You, on the one hand, you talk black out of the side of your mouth, and I'm not in any mean pushing black nationalism. I'm simply saying, why would you get in that fight? I mean, why would you get in that fight? You know, obviously,
Angela also Brooks is running,
right? That's what I'm saying.
A black woman, and why would you back her?
But why would you get in the race at all? Since you got, you know, you from another state, and you would not want that to happen to you when you were running. Mm-hmm. And so there's obviously a cash nexus.
Well, we do know that that Hakeem Jeffries has received, I think, over $1 million from AIPAC over his tenure in office. And the same thing with Gregory Meeks. He's another one that falls into that same camp. And both of them, along with the vice president, Kamala Harris, they're all behind the Global Fragilities Act, which is being used as the rationale for the United States to reinvade Haiti. Go figure.
Again, we have to do an analysis of how the results were obtained rather than the results. I mean, it looks like Haiti is a failed state. So how do you go from the first independent black republic on the planet? Well, not on the planet, but in that era, because mm-hmm. there were black leaderships. But how do you become that, given any slave who could get to Haiti freedom? I mean, how do you get defeating Napoleon, then how do you become the basket case, a basket case in the world? How does that happen? Why do they still owe France? It seems, should be the other way around.
Way around.
Why is
the United States wringing its hands and going through all these machinations talking about, we have to go in and stabilize this country, when the United States is responsible for the instability? Why does the United States send $60 billion to Ukraine when the United States is the one that started the fight in the first place, and Ukraine is merely the proxy for the United States? Why is the United States saying we can't do anything with Netanyahu? Yes, you can. You call him and tell him you're not giving him any more money. You're against genocide, but you send him the bullets, you send him the bombs, you provide the logistics. Same thing with China. Oh, Taiwan. Why are you trying to pick a fight with China, who, by the way, holds more of your debt than anybody else in the room? Why? Let's get to the cause. Right?
Of course. I mean, again, the Haiti situation, it gets played out, and we go in. I mean, why did the United States involve itself in the overthrow of Jean Bertram?
Aristide. Jean-Bertrand Aristide.
Aristide.
Twice.
A legitimately elected Democratic leader who's very, very positive. Why do you place sanctions on Cuba only because you don't believe in what they believe in?
Here's another
and then get upset when they're successful in the biotech industry and what have you. And you know, the list goes on and on and on, but because they don't think that people study history or read history.
The average Haitian makes less than $3 a day. Folks, you can look it up. The average Haitian makes less than $3 a day. But somehow they can walk around with $1,800 sniper rifles. Military grade equipment.
Where'd they get them from?
Florida.
That's the question that you ask all of these militias running around the deserts of Africa. Where are they getting these weapons from? Where do they get food from?
Right. Brother Tom Porter, man, as always, thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long day.
I know it has, and I appreciate you giving me your time today. I got to thank you, Tom Porter, so much, man, for joining the show today. Greatly, greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Have a good evening.
Folks, thank you so much for listening to the Connecting the Dots podcast with me, Dr. Wilmer Leon. Stay tuned for new episodes each week. Please follow and subscribe. Go to the Patreon account. We'll greatly appreciate you contributing to the program. We can't do this without your support. So please go to the Patreon account. The address for that is on the bottom of your screen. Also, leave a review, share the show with those that you think will like it. And then those that you think will hate it, send them to them anyway. They might just surprise you. Follow us on social media. You can find, again, all the links to the show are below in the description. And remember, folks, that this is where the analysis of politics, culture, and history converge, because talk without analysis is just chatter. And we don't chatter on Connecting the Dots. See you next time. Until then, I'm Dr. Wilmer Leon. Have a great one. Peace. I'm out.
Connecting the Dots with Dr. Wilmer Leon, where the analysis of politics, culture, and history converge.